back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. My guest today is Phil Rocco, who is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. And we left you before the break on the suspenseful cliff of why there is a rise of authoritarian fascism throughout the world.
Yeah. Wasn't
Welcome
that a fun
to
cliffhanger?
Tuesday show.
Oh, man.
Because I want to talk... Because shifting to talking about the RNC coming to Milwaukee feels like small potatoes versus like such a bigger topic.
Yeah.
But I think, like you said, it's like, why would a party want to do this? Is it the amount of people who are all trying to cling to power in their own circle of influence, whether that's at the local level, the state level, the federal level? Is it money? Is it...
Yeah.
Oligarchs being like, well, we just want to buy everyone so then we can run everything.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different, you know, factors, but you have to think about like the constraints in which people operate matter a lot, right? If you have some sort of mobilized electorate that can hold you accountable, or you have an organization that's like mass membership based, and if the members don't like you, they kick you out. It's harder to do those kinds of things. And like the one thing about parties, generally speaking, political parties that have changed over the last, you know, 30 or 40 years is, you know, they were never quite like this in the United States, but much less like this than they ever have been, is they're not really bottom up. Hierarchical organizations anymore, if they ever were. So there's a lot less like accountability built in at multiple levels of the structure. And what happened in the 70s and 80s, my friend Alex Hertel Fernandez has this great book called State Capture, is that, you know, the Republican Party especially shifted from being like a traditional hierarchical party, sort of made up of, you know, your standard like Rotary Club members, Kiwanis, right, Chamber of Commerce. And you saw a new kind of stream of ideological networks move in. And so a lot of the old structures were sort of destroyed, new structures were built, and people had a very different understanding of what democracy was about and what it was for. And that, I think, we're now sort of seeing the tail end of that, or the sort of consequence of that. And you can sort of see that, you know, interestingly enough, in like less democratized or more recent democracies like Hungary, where these experiments in democracy kind of failed. You know, parties like Fidesz, which is Viktor Orban's party, also kind of these networks are actually transnational. These people go back and forth. And that's why, you know, CPAC, which is the conservative national political conference here, they had their conference in Hungary this year.
It was only like a month or so ago, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's worth thinking about, like, that is a big thing that's changed. And there are, you know, in a way, fewer mass membership organizations, less unionization, for example, that can really kind of anchor democracy. And that's not just true in the U.S., but true kind of across the quote-unquote democratized world. So yeah, it's worth thinking about like where are we historically, right? And the fact that this is like a process that is the result of a longer unfolding, I think.
Well, also, as Matthew McConaughey said, is time a flat circle? Are we just going?
Exactly. Yes.
Have we been here before? So is there hope that we will get out because it is just a cycle? Are we in the fourth turning right now?
Oh, the fourth turning. That terrible book. No, I don't think history is cyclical necessarily.
Okay.
I think that things progress, and I think you have to hope that there's a way out, right? But I think it actually requires reckoning with history a little bit.
Yeah.
And thinking about, in particular, the idea that, like, sometimes there isn't a formal institutionalized process to use alone to do things, right? If you look at the history, why did countries democratize in the first place? They democratize in part because of these moments of huge political disruption, the emergence of a mass, like, working class. And you saw these moments where people just, in a way, use the power they had as a class to demand the vote. And eventually the people who, you know, were in control of things and hadn't democratized, they're like, this would be better for us. This would be a better world if we didn't have to deal with these disruptions so frequently. And so there's some pretty good historical research to suggest that, like, it's actually only through the moments of huge disruption that you get democracy in the first place.
Which is, Yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge scholar of history, but if you think about like the French Revolution, you're like, oh, yeah.
Yes.
They just killed some people and then they wanted to be able to vote.
Right.
All right. Well, I want to start the topic, but probably continue it after the break. But you've written a fair amount on the RNC coming to Milwaukee.
Sure.
And we've talked about it some on this show. I know that my piece for my video column for Journal Sentinel this week is digging a little bit more into the number of a $200 million impact. And I know PolitiFact already said that that number was a little squishy. But, you know, there's huge kind of the it's not red, it's not blue, it's green conversation.
Yes.
And I guess, is there an upside to this?
Well, I mean, I think that depends on who, you know, depends on an upside for whom, right? So let's just take the first question, right? Is there an upside for the city and its finances? Because in a lot of other cities, you can say, okay, you get more people coming into town. That's just automatically, if the city can collect sales tax revenue or revenue from other sources, that, you know, there's going to be an upside there for the city. The difference in Milwaukee is that the state prevents us from collecting sales tax. And the state prevents us even from collecting the fees that are associated with the Wisconsin Center. Those go back to the state, too. They go to the center district, which is a district created by the state. But that's sort of too technical.
That's basically like a bid. Like the business
investing. Okay. Something like that. So the city is not going to see direct revenue impact at all. In fact, that revenue is going to go right back to the Wisconsin Joint Finance Committee, which, you know, for those playing at home, is controlled by the Wisconsin State Legislature. So, like, on that point alone, I think there's no direct impact. Now, you might say, okay, but Wisconsin or Milwaukee kind of businesses will benefit. And that's where the $200 million figure comes in. And, you know, I think, look, it's a pretty optimistic figure. I don't know what your research has told you. But I think that the typical situation with a city like this is you see about $20 million from the hotels. And then the question is, okay, how much more do you need to go to get $200 million? And that's going to have to come from, you know, food and businesses, you know, food and other kinds of things. So it's, I think we can get into what that number means after the break.
Yeah, so we'll go to one more break and then continue the conversation on RNC and also kind of how local public finance is.